and stay active.
Oh, I wish there's a mole in the ground. Oh, I wish there's a mole in the ground. If there's a mole in the ground, then I'd root the mountains down. Oh, I wish there's a mole in the ground. Oh, I wish there's Giannata sunglasses. Oh, I wish there's Giannata sunglasses. If there's not a sunglasses, then I'd show you messages hiding before your very eyes.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kabu.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KABU, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing, unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kabu.fm.
Pacifica Radio in San Francisco, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, the Election Crimes Bulletin returns with compelling new information about potential massive voter suppression in Georgia. Indeed, Greg Palast reports tonight on the Bulletin and Truth Dig that mail-in ballots in Georgia plunged by 1 million. Forcing the state's crucial runoff in the Senate race. Also, immigrants' rights organizations join the national demand for Congress to keep its promise to pass crucial and meaningful immigration reform. And Roots Action Press is ahead with its national campaign to stop Biden from running for a second term. That's what I said. All this coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. We broadcast every weekday from 5 to 6 over the Pacifica Radio Network. We are live today in San Francisco over KPFA and live in Los Angeles. And we are happy to have you along. And we're going to kick off the show with an old friend of mine, Jeff Cohen. Jeff Cohen is the co-founder, policy director of Roots Action. And Roots Action has a campaign going. And everybody, I'm thinking, Jeff Cohen, that once again, you're going against the current because at this point, Joe Biden, to most Democrats, is equal to FDR.
I wish. The reality is what we learned from the midterms is that the Democratic Party as a whole is far more popular than Joe Biden, whose approval ratings are so low. And the Democrats went against history and had a strong showing on Tuesday in spite of Joe Biden and his low approval ratings, not because of Joe Biden. But you're right, there isn't even a progressive Democratic politician in Washington who's been willing to say, look, it's a good thing that Biden defeated Trump. That was a historic achievement. But we need new and bolder leadership, a new and bolder standard bearer for 2024. No one's been willing to say that on the record. So, you know, Norman Solomon and I were pretty good at getting messages through even the mainstream media. And there's a vacuum in the mainstream media because they're having all of these stories. Should Biden run in 2024? Should he not run? What did the midterms say? And we're the group that's out there with don'trunjoe.org and hashtag don'trunjoe. Roots Action is the one group that's saying, no, he should not run, that we need a bolder leadership. We need a stronger standard bearer. We need someone who can get things through, even his own or her own party. And Biden just, he doesn't know how to use the bully pulpit that the presidency gives someone to mobilize his own party or the public behind very popular economic measures that would make it easier for Democrats to win in the future. He just doesn't have those strong leadership skills. Sometimes he doesn't understand what the progressive agenda is, and when he is supporting a progressive measure, he just doesn't know how to enunciate and explain what the issue is to the U.S. public. We need better leadership in 2024.
It was interesting. He did seem to tilt and to finally take serious for the Democratic Party that democracy could easily disappear in this country. And so he sort of went against the tide a bit, wouldn't you say, in talking a bunch about how dangerous a moment this is?
Yeah, that's very important. He's just, I mean, I watch every speech, and, you know, I'm not just watching Fox News making fun of him and making fun of all of his gaffes and his misstatements. But even when he's right, he's often just sort of weak and not quite articulate. And, you know, in 2024, if it's Biden again, it'll be a referendum on Biden. What we want is it to be a battle between the Democrats and the extremists of the Republican Party, so extreme that they're election denialists, they're climate denialists, you know, they're reproductive choice denialists. You want the focus on the Republicans or the Democrats versus the Republicans. You don't want the focus on Joe Biden, whose approval ratings are low and probably will be low. And the other thing you don't want is, you know, the economy could be quite rocky in 2024, as it has been this year. And you want someone who's a strong populist and can enunciate progressive populist principles. Every state except two, the exit poll showed on Tuesday that the voters considered inflation to be the number one issue. And if Biden was a different kind of person, if he was more like Bernie, or more like Katie Porter, the congresswoman from Southern California, or more like, yes, Warren, he would be enunciating that this problem of inflation, it's not labor market, that's a small factor. It's not, supply chain problems, that's a factor. The biggest factor is corporate price gouging and corporate profiteering, and corporate profits in almost every sector are at record levels. And you have a couple CEOs who've been caught explaining that they're jacking up the prices because they can get away with it in this environment. So Warren and Bernie's been calling for a windfall profits tax. There was a way to take inflation, if you were a progressive populist Democrat, and make it your issue. And not let the Republicans, they have no plan to fight inflation. And so I think the reason that Pelosi and Biden can't do inflation in a progressive way and spin it against corporations and on behalf of working class people is because of the corporate donor class that they're so indebted to. So again, if the economy is rocky in 2024, which is possible, Biden will be having to defend a status quo, and you don't want to be defending the the economic or corporate status quo if you're running against a faux populist like DeSantis or even Trump or whoever. So that's why we're trying to make a change. We have urged him. We've got 2,000 people in a couple days who signed our petition in New Hampshire. That's the first in the nation primary. We've got tens of thousands of people that have been messaged in New Hampshire that are either Democrats or they're independents who ask for Democratic ballots in the primary. So we're focusing on New Hampshire. Then we're going to go to other early states, and we want to convince Biden to announce, hopefully early next year, that he's stepping aside. And it would be good for progressives. It would be good for the Democratic Party if he makes that announcement.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're speaking with Jeff Cohen. He's co-founder, policy director at Roots Action. They have put forth a petition and campaign, Don't Run Joe. They do not want Biden to have a second run. Now, Jeff, you really sort of opened the door with Norman in terms of deep media criticism and helping to understand and explain how important it is to have a media that really does serious reporting. I think we're sort of suffering now on the other side of that. When you look at MSNBC, I mean, you and Phil Donahue were kicked off of NBC for truth-telling. I'm going to put it that way. But now you got, I can't tell if I'm, what I'm looking at. I see Jen Psaki on MSNBC, and I think it's, you know, a press conference from Biden.
It's, yeah, there's no doubt that MSNBC is in the corporate wing of the Democratic Party. They have a lot of Republican never-Trumpers. They have no real progressive voices. It's basically, you know, the Democratic establishment channel. CNN... was sort of like that, and CNN's moving to the right because John Malone, their new ownership, is wants CNN to be more like Fox News, he said. So, right. Yes, I'm a believer in independent, journalistically sound media, and it can't be sponsored by big corporations. Why is it that CNN and MSNBC can't talk about the role of corporate price gouging and corporate profiteering and inflation? They cover inflation every single hour, and they don't talk about the main factor that serious economists have been pointing out, that it's corporate profit taking. And again, inflation is discussed hour after hour after hour, and as bad as the Democratic Party leadership has been in explaining inflation and who's causing it and how to fight it, the corporate liberal mainstream media, as you like MSNBC and CNN, have been utterly inept. And it helped the Republicans. Again, if there had been a better discussion of inflation, which was the number one issue in every state except Michigan and Pennsylvania, where abortion, according to exit polls, voters said that was our number one issue. Of course, Democrats won big in Pennsylvania and big in Michigan. But in states where it was all about inflation, the corporate mainstream media completely miscovered that issue for the last 6 months. And the Democratic Party leadership, including Biden, they did not enunciate how they're going to fight it and who's causing it. And I believe that's because the Democratic Party elite establishment is just too indebted to corporate donors who, you know, if a Democrat talks honestly about corporate profiteering and how it's hurting the middle class and the working class and the poor, the corporate donors call up the Democratic politicians and say, hey, we don't want to hear any of this class warfare talk. So that's the problem. But Dennis, I'm so glad you do bring up the media, because I think if we had a fairer media and a real debate about the issues, the extremism of the Republican Party would just disqualify them, as it is with the inferior election coverage that we've had these last months. You know, a lot of voters are afraid of the extremism of the Democratic Party. I mean, I'm sorry, the extremism of the Republican Party. As bad as things are, and as bad as people were blaming it on Biden and Democrats, a lot of voters in the middle are afraid of the Republican Party. That's a good thing.
This, what about this sort of pole vaulting? What about everybody in the liberal media bought into the wave, red wave?
Yeah.
How, what's the poll deal, and how do you look at that?
Well, again, the journalism isn't about making predictions with polls. It's about informing voters of what the issues are and what's causing the problems facing the country. I think that there's no doubt that the polls undercounted young people. Young people got out and voted, not in the numbers that older people vote, but bigger than expected. And they were voting heavily on climate and abortion. I just think, you know, it's just hard to do polling now. And you're right, the mainstream media, every day we get a different poll. Instead of discussing what the issues are and bringing on real experts, you do it. Democracy Now! Does it. You know, bring on the experts to discuss what the social problems are facing our country, especially the working class, and explain possible solutions. That's called journalism. Talking about a new poll every day and turning elections into a horse race and pretending it's like a sporting event, that happens in our country more than any other country. You could go to Europe, where public broadcasting is far more powerful than commercialized corporate media, and you'll see that they often can cover the issues and cover debates, and small parties, green parties, get access to the media. In this country, it's like a game. It's a sporting event. It's a horse race, and they were wrong. They got it all wrong.
All right. Before we say goodbye to you, Don't Run, Joe is the campaign, Roots Action. How do people get more information if they want to be a part, learn more about Roots Action?
RootsAction.org, and the new website is don'trunjoe.org. We've got a petition up there for people nationally to try to persuade Joe Biden to step aside and allow bolder, newer leadership. And then if you're, and we have a special petition for New Hampshire, but anyone can go on and sign the national petition aimed at persuading Biden not to run. And I believe there's a 50-50 chance he will not run, and he will announce that in February or March, which I think would be a great thing for progressives and for Democrats.
All right, you're going to come back, and we're going to talk about that. Yeah. Then, Jeff Cohen, it has been a long ride, and it's amazing that you're still doing it, and we're still doing
it.
Well,
you're still doing it. All right, thanks, Dennis.
Thanks, Jeff. Take care.
Bye-bye.
And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. We're going to take a short... Well, we're gonna jump into the Election Crimes Bulletin with Greg Powles. We got a big story.
This whole election is being rigged. The election is being rigged.
It's totally rigged.
Yes, Donald, it's rigged because your cronies rigged it.
So says Rolling Stone investigative reporter Greg Palast.
You're removing black voters from the voter rolls just so you can win this election?
We will treat those people from January 6th fairly. And if it requires pardons, we will give them pardons.
So you didn't call him, but you challenged his right to vote or have his ballot challenged.
Sir, get out of my house.
Okay, I will get out of your house.
I just... Now.
It's now time for your Election Crimes Bulletin with Greg Palast.
And this is Dennis Bernstein with Greg Palast. And things are popping and crackling, Greg. I'm looking at this new piece. It's burning my fingertips, hot off the press, just up at Truth Dig now. And the point? Absentee ballots plunged from a total of 1.28 million in November 2020 to a little over 240,000. These are votes that typically go, what, 75-80% to Democrats? I thought we broke all kinds of voting records. We heard from the new governor that more voting was done this time than any other time in history. Greg, what's going on?
A correction, because you don't have a new governor. You heard from the current governor that this is Georgia. First of all, let's give people a hint. This is Georgia, okay, that we're talking about.
It's Georgia.
Just literally minutes ago, Truthdig released an exclusive investigation of mine, which we uncovered that there was a drop of 1 million. Let me repeat that. A drop of 1 million mail-in votes, over 80% drop in mail-in voting in Georgia. That was completely unreported in the press, except for, of course, Flashpoints and now Truthdig and Palace Investigative Fund. Nothing unusual there. What's unusual is 1 million votes. No one discussed it because the Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, that the press loves, issued a press release saying literally record early voting turnout in Georgia.
That's
and
right,
even the voting rights groups were dancing up and down. I have to tell you, when I was in Georgia, everyone was very proud. Oh, we got it made. Warnock's going to walk away with it. Abrams is going to walk away. Stacey Abrams is running against Brian Kemp, is going to walk away with it. Now, people are shocked that there was in the final count a dead heat basically between Reverend Senator Warnock and his Republican challenger, Herschel Walker. They are now, Warnock did win by 35,000 votes. That's pretty dinky. It's like 0.1%, but he did win by 35,000 votes. Georgia and Louisiana are the only two states which have this runoff provision, which was created in response to the Voting Rights Act, because there was the worry that, in fact, a black man would win statewide office if there was a split in the white vote. In this case, it was a split in the conservative vote. 2% went to a libertarian. So that while Warnock won, he was just 23,000 votes short of going over the 50% line, which you have to do to avoid a runoff. Okay, well, if that's the voters' will, fine. But it wasn't the voters' will. It was Jim Crow's will. How do you lose a million votes? And when I say a million, it's not like California losing a million. It's Georgia. That's about an 82% drop in mail-in ballots. Now, how did that happen, and what does Jim Crow have to do with it? The answer is that Brian Kemp, the governor, with his in cahoots with his Secretary of State in the Georgia legislature, passed this bill, SB 202, which the NAACP correctly refers to as Jim Crow 2.2, and it virtually made voting by mail illegal. Now, why would they do that? The answer is, in the last election and in this, we have the exact numbers for mail-in votes versus regular. And in mail-in voting, Reverend Warnock, when he ran in November of 2020 and then won the runoff in January, his mail-in ballots, he was winning more than 2-1 statewide. And in the key areas like Fulton County and Atlanta, basically the four Atlanta counties, he was winning 5-1 in mail-in ballots, way beyond the state margins, which are pretty even. So, and Joe Biden, if it weren't for mail-in ballots, Joe Biden would not have won Georgia or the presidency. If it weren't not for mail-in ballots, Warnock and Ossoff, John Ossoff, would not be senators now. The Republican Party took note of that. A guy named Donald Trump has been on a warpath against mail-in voting because people don't vote for him by mail. That's, no one ever brought up that point. When he said, don't trust mail-in ballots, what he's saying is don't trust ballots which come in which don't have my name on them. But the Republican Party has taken good note, even though the Secretary of State and Brian Kemp have said that there was no fraud in the last election, have said that there was no danger of fraud in the Georgia system. Nevertheless, they basically virtually banned mail-in voting. Now, how do they do this? Number one, the first and most important thing is that they radically cut the number of days in which you can ask for or send in your mail-in ballot. And now in this runoff, this is why it's dangerous, they've cut the runoff time. There will be a runoff between Warnock and Herschel Walker on December 6th. That's less than 1 month from the general election. By time the counties scramble, remember, they got to print all these ballots, set up this whole voting apparatus, do it in less than 30 days. There is virtually no time in the runoff for them to send out and receive mail-in ballots, so that they are making it, in this runoff, especially difficult to vote by mail. Again, we're talking between two to one to five to one for the Democrats on these mail-in ballots. So they're wiping out mail-in voting for the runoff. It's going to be almost non-existent. In the general, which denied Warnock the vote, his totals. Let's see here. I can give you some numbers worth tattooing on your wrist, Dennis. In 2020, Warnock's mail-in vote had gone to 160. He went from 164,000 to just a fragment of that. So 1 million votes missing, overwhelmingly going to Democrats. This would have given Warnock unquestionably the amount he needed to go over the top. They've also, and this is the other big one, they've also locked away the drop boxes. So one of the things that...
Well, that's amazing. Yeah. It's so obvious, too. It's such a physical, you know, and they can get away with this stuff on paper, but what did it go down from 107 to 25 in black communities, if you will, progressive communities or whatever, and in rural Republican counties, they put more boxes in. I mean, it's so obvious, right?
So the way
that
they wrote the law, here's how they write the law. Now, there's only a couple cities in Georgia which is a population of over 100,000. That would be Savannah and Atlanta and maybe Athens. And these are Democratic areas, overwhelmingly Democratic areas. They said you can't have more than one ballot box, drop box, per 100,000 people, per 100,000. So we lost over three quarters of the drop boxes. Understand what a drop box is. It's just like a mailbox that's outside a government office. There's a security camera on it. And they now have moved the drop boxes inside the government buildings, inside the polling stations. And they say you can only use a drop box under the new law when the polling inside the polling stations and only when the polling stations are open for early voting. So in other words, if the whole point of the drop box is for people who have worked multiple shifts, can't get out during the day, and they need that drop box for the off hours. That's the whole point. That was eliminated. In addition, because they eliminated Souls to the Polls Sunday, the weekend voting before the election, people have to... So there's more in-person voting, so you have much longer lines. You cannot go up and now... For example, on Election Day, if you had your mail-in ballot, you can't drop it into a drop box on Election Day as you can in California. And so it just made it incredibly inconvenient. Plus, they add the requirement that you include some type of ID numbers or photo ID number to include in your absentee ballot. It's just one more crazy step that, of course, if people miss their ballot, gets disqualified. So it's a serious this was a serious blow to the Democratic Party, and they obviously they pulled people out. But when you understand what's going on, you eliminate the make it very difficult to vote by mail, then the lines get longer and longer for in-person voting, and then they say, well, and then you can't give someone water or food while they're waiting in line 5 hours. C.K. Hoffler, the head of Rainbow, the chairwoman of Rainbow Push Coalition, waited 11 hours in line this is this is America. This is, you know, believe it or not, it's not Zimbabwe, it's Georgia. 11 hours in line. No, don't give them food or water. It's not just, it's not a violation. It's a felony crime.
I don't get that. I don't understand how you can just create a felony like that. I guess it would then be tested in the Supreme Court and have no problem being accepted.
Well, that's the problem, is that, talking to the major voting rights lawyers, Gerald Griggs, the head of the NAACP in Georgia, Rainbow Push, C.K. Hoffler, Barbara Arnwine, Columbia University, they're all kind of trying to avoid the Supreme Court at this moment because, I mean, you go to the Supreme Court, and if, you know, I'm just afraid they're going to start saying, oh, well, just because the sign said darkies vote here, why is that a problem? Because as they've said, they literally wrote in 2013, when the court was not as right-wing as it is now, in defenestrating the Voting Rights Act, they said, Jim Crow, this is a quote, Jim Crow has been eradicated. That's a quote from the decision. So you don't have to worry, Dennis. And Georgia voters of color don't have to worry about Jim Crow, just that they get long lines, they don't get the drop boxes. And by the way, the Georgia government has now, the Republicans running the voting system, have now said that the new law, which shortened the runoff, and they were very brilliant by putting it December 6th, because that's after Thanksgiving. So what they're saying is that they're eliminating, there are only three possible Sundays between now and the election, and two of those, and probably all three, will be barred from Sunday voting. So they brilliantly timed the runoff, crushing it down to 1 month from 2 months to prepare and campaign and send in those mail-in ballots. Brilliant. So they've eliminated Souls to the Polls weekend voting. They have effectively eliminated drop box and mail-in voting. All of those votes, the Souls to the Polls, the drop box voting, the mail-in ballots, overwhelmingly go Democratic. And like I say, they already lost 1 million. They've had a drop of 1 million votes.
That's amazing. Let me tell people, Greg, we're talking about your new article that just came up on Truth Dig, and it's about what we are talking in terms of a new law created in Georgia that is really having a major impact on the election, although the portrayal and the failure of the press to really tell this story in a way that people understand Jim Crow 2020, or is it 2-2, whatever.
2-2. Yeah.
Go on.
I have to say, okay, so what's happening here, and again, how did the press get it so wrong? And because unfortunately, and, you know, again, I know I'm kind of harsh on my colleagues, but guys, I know you're under tremendous deadline pressures, but they've become repeaters, not reporters. I can't tell you how many outlets, from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution to the AP to NBC, literally were using the exact words of the Republican officials' press releases to say that there was this massive early voting turnout. And the words were taken in all these reports, including New York Times too, were taken directly from the press releases of the Secretary of State. And then Brian Kemp, when he got up and gave his victory speech, one of the most ungracious victory speeches I've ever heard in my life, he kept banging on Stacey Abrams. He just beat her, right? Okay, enough. But it was very unusual. Usually you're gracious, you know, let's all be Georgians again. He didn't say that at all, you know. But he did say, they said our new law, SB 202, which stands for Senate Bill 202, he said they called it Jim Crow 2.0. They called it Jim Crow with a tie on. But then he said, you know, this massive turnout, which of course is phony, didn't happen. This massive turnout proved that there were no impediments to voting, proved that SB 202 was not Jim Crow in a necktie. Yeah, it was Jim Crow in a noose almost. It was really, this SB 202 is definitely the most vicious single change in voting laws I've seen in one shot in my career, and I kid you not.
And we can expect to see this kind of law generalized throughout the country, can't we? This is going to be a tone setter, wouldn't you say, Greg?
Well, not just a tone setter. Understand, it's already being pushed because if we discussed, you know, we make fun of it, that film 2,000 Mules. But we shouldn't be laughing because that film specifically went after Dropbox voting. Specifically, they used Atlanta, Georgia as the poster boy in the film for ballot stuffing using drop boxes. Now, you have to understand that the Georgia Bureau of Investigation ended up doing a ballot-by-ballot audit. Every single drop box ballot in Atlanta, there were over, you know, there were a few hundred thousand. They went through each one, checked signatures, checked the numbers. And you have to understand, your mail-in ballot has a unique barcode and QR code on it. Plus, you have to have a signature match. So it's a three-point verification process. And they didn't find a single, not a single, fraudulent ballot. And they went through over a quarter million ballots. It was just, and yet they're saying, well, we have to get rid of these drop boxes, or we have to make them so that they're barely used. And you're going to see, well, we've already seen that, the closure of drop boxes and that type of drive-up voting was banned in Texas. It's under attack in Arizona, in Wisconsin, all over the country. And it's been promoted by, well, it's been promoted as the New Georgia Project, says, by groups like ALEC. But this propaganda film has really made it kind of a popular crusade on the right. And the Democrats are not really fighting back because they're saying once again, well, the Democrat, you know, we accept any outcome of an election, and elections in the end are all fair. The problem is that the voting rights group, not the Democratic Party, they are not fooled. To them, this is Jim Crow. It's a direct attack on the black voter. Again, this is not, it's not just, and it's not minor. You're talking about a major Democratic flood of votes in those drop boxes. They're not stuffed there. They've gone through each ballot. So this is, it's racial and it's partisan. And there's also a problem here, Greg.
I have to just jump in. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just have to jump in here because it's also a profound failure of the press. They're busy pole vaulting and jumping from one poll to another that they're not reporting. This is, again, we talked about it, but how this could be missed, how this could be run by the press and, you know, it not come up as problematic and it be an indicator that there's going to be other states with the same struggle. This is a major failure in reporting. Wouldn't you say, Greg, this is big?
Well, I mean, to me, yes. And to be very honest, it wasn't the toughest investigation we've ever done, though I want to give props to my co-investigators here, including David Ambrose, who really dug deep into it. One thing that the Secretary of State has, despite he has a phony press release, but he does have a website that does have all the data there if you're willing to just pull out your calculator and add it up and say, well, wait a minute. How come you're not? What happened to the mail-in votes? When you talk about early voting, it always includes the mail-in votes, which are sent in early, the absentee ballots. That's part of early voting. How come that was missing? And that's when we went in and said, holy cow, it's an 82% drop in mail-in voting. 82%, 1 million ballots, poof. Now, obviously, some people then went in person. Anyway, they didn't just say, oh, I can't vote by mail, I won't vote. But clearly there was a massive hit to that, to the urban vote, the people that cannot easily come in during working hours because that's the only hours allowed. And it should have been caught by colleagues in the press. But I should also add one thing, though. Because of this and because of this runoff, we are now bringing back your ability to see the film Vigilante, Georgia's Vote Suppression Hitman, gratis at vigilantemovie.com. The next 2 weeks, get that link, vigilantemovie.com, to everyone you know in Georgia. It's about...
Sounds very relevant, Greg. It yep. sounds very relevant and timely.
Unfortunately, I can't believe that we had to bring it back.
Well, I'm glad we have it and glad you do the great work you do in terms of investigating about the vote suppression. We have been talking about an article of yours that was just released by Truth Dig, and it's all about what this show has been focusing on. You should check it out at Truth Dig. It's Greg Palast. You go to gregpalast.com and follow his work there. Greg, we appreciate all the time you give us and all the great reporting that you do. And final word, anything else you want to say to your adoring public?
Well, what I would like to do is make sure that you get this art. Go to Truth Digger, go to gregpalast.com, get the article into Georgia, get the link vigilantemovie.com into Georgia. That's the whole point. We want people to be knowledgeable and prepared. I'm not telling you to vote for, but I'm telling you, you better take care of your vote. And don't expect to go to polls for the polls Sunday because it's gone. Unbelievable.
No polls there. All right, Greg Palast, gregpalast.com. Thank you. Be safe, all right? Come back soon. We're going to need you.
Thank you. Bye.
And you are listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We are going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by our good friend Rene Saucedo from Almas. They are pushing for passage of the pending registry bill. That's very important. Stay with us. Celestial Blues on Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine. And we welcome back to these airwaves Rene Saucedo. She is with Almas. And they are in a battle they're trying to hold the Congress accountable for passing the pending registry bill. This is a very important piece of legislation regarding immigrants' rights organizations, and they're pushing it all the way. Rene Saucedo, welcome back to Flashpoints. Could you talk a little bit about what this struggle is? What is the registry bill? Why is it important?
Thank you, Dennis. Yes, representing Almas Libres with the Raices Collective here in Sonoma County, and proud to be the coordinator and organizer for this group of dynamic immigrant and indigenous women who have been organizing for a few years now around passing a fair and just immigration reform in Congress, partnering with other groups, of course, across the country. And over the past few months and over the past several years, as you know, Dennis, we have seen multiple immigration reform proposals being introduced in Congress, some better than others, some awful because they include a lot of the bad policies such as further border enforcement and further criminalization of the undocumented, as well as an expansion of temporary worker programs. But right now, out of all the immigration reform policies that exist that are pending in Congress, there is one that is particularly good for immigrant communities, and that's why we're pushing it currently through Congress.
Well, tell us about it. What exactly is the legislation? Where is it? Who's sponsoring it? And it's nice if there's something that actually could be done, because you know who keeps getting the shaft decade after decade. It would be nice to see something happen.
That's right. We still have 10 to 12 million undocumented migrants in the U.S. Living and working in the shadows, which means they continue to unnecessarily be exploited at work. They continue to be criminalized, and they continue to live in terror. So we're very hopeful. H.R. 8433, the full title of the bill is called the Renewing Immigration Provisions of the Immigration Act of 1929. But we call it the Registry Bill, because what it simply does is that it revises the current immigration registry system, which for decades and decades has allowed people to apply for legal residency if they've lived in the country since a certain date. What the registry, what the current registry bill will do is that it will allow undocumented folks to apply for legal residency if they've lived in the U.S. continuously and, you know, have nothing bad on their record. So it's like a rolling registry, as long as you've been living in the country for 7 years. And we approximate that about 8 million undocumented people will be able to apply for their legal residency status through this bill. It's something that we're pretty excited about. And since just this past year, through the Build Back Better bill, we lost legalization provisions by just two votes. So, you know, the organizing these past decades have led us up to this moment, and immigrant communities are very hopeful that we'll be able to pass this registry bill even in the next month during the lame duck session.
And this kind of legislation, this registry bill, would make a big difference in terms of making life, the quality of life, better, making life safer, particularly, if you will, for women, for not making it possible to be visible in the United States, not afraid, for instance, if you're being brutalized, to go to law enforcement, to seek out the help you need. This is a big part of why we need this kind of expansive legislation, right?
Absolutely. This is a human rights issue, as you and I have discussed many times on this program. This is a human rights issue because as long as we maintain a community of undocumented workers, and by the way, we all know the reason that's behind that, right? Corporate America wants to maintain its malleable pool of exploitable labor. But what is happening is that the undocumented status that people are being forced to stay in is causing a lot of suffering across families, not just undocumented families, but most immigrant families are mixed. meaning that there are some undocumented members, and then you have U.S. citizen members, and everyone is impacted because just like the women who talk to our organization and say that they don't want to report their batterer when they are in a situation of domestic violence for fear that they themselves will be deported by local law enforcement. What's happening now is that there are millions of people, including many, many of our members, who are suffering from emotional distress because they can't travel back to their home country temporarily, which means that many of them can't even see their children. They were forced to leave behind for financial reasons. Many of them can't visit their parents when their parents are ill or die. And that causes a high level of anxiety and stress and depression. ICE arrests are still happening across the country. Now, you know, even under the Democrats, under the Biden administration, they say that they're conducting targeted ICE enforcement, but these are still fathers, mothers, people who have been released from jail, perhaps, who are immediately reported to ICE and deported. So this is a life and death cause for our members and for millions of undocumented migrants, not just Latinx migrants, but migrants of African descent, migrants from Asian countries. Enough is enough. Let's pass a bill in Congress that allows people a reasonable path to citizenship so that people may come out of the shadows and be able to live in dignity like any other human being.
Amen to that. That's the voice of Renee Saucedo. She's with Almas Libres Rises Collective. She is talking to us and calling for the passage of a particular registry bill that would bring some comfort and a lot of safety, necessary security to some of the folks who do the hardest work in this country that we all depend on. I cannot let you go without a little discussion about the role that the governor could play either in undermining this, or if he wanted to, he could support it. Now you got a governor, he's sort of well-dressed, handsome dude, seems to do well based on farm worker labor and stuff like that. And now he wants to run for president. Your thoughts on, do you think your community would want to support him based on the kinds of actions, the background, the way he's responded to the things you care most about with the people you represent?
Absolutely not. He has not done enough for our community and for other oppressed communities in California. And I would add him to a larger group of Democrats who have not come out publicly in the name of immigrant rights, who have not, even though we have asked them to publicly support the registry bill, such as Speaker Nancy Pelosi. All of these folks have been very tepid. President Biden has been tepid. He has not come out publicly saying that he has concerns about all of these proposals. Well, you know, we need to remind the president, congressional leaders, and folks in D.C. that they made a promise to our community a couple of years ago in the last election. They promised us a path to citizenship. And what have we gotten so far? Even after the Latinx community contributed to this last wave of Democratic wins, they are not in our camp. They are not serving our interests. And so I think that, you know, Gavin Newsom is part of that Democratic Party machine. Nancy Pelosi, of course. And they're the so-called liberals in the party. People are fed up. People are fed up. And the Democrats are not going to be able to get our support automatically anymore unless they come through with their promises. And they promised a path to citizenship. So we are reminding them this week, Dennis, and I really appreciate you having us.
We're about to get to all the actions because this is building to a request that you're making to the people for support. So you want to sort of lay it out, what how people can get engaged, involved, learn more, all of that?
Yeah, I want to share that Almas Libres is a proud delegation in Washington, D.C. right now. They'll be there until November 17th to conduct congressional meetings with folks from various parts of the country. On November 17th, we're having a community forum to discuss the registry bill. And this forum will be in Spanish, so Spanish speakers are welcome to join us. And the Zoom link is on our Facebook page, Almas Libres/Raices Collective. And finally, we're having an action that everyone can participate in, a march and a rally to gain Speaker Nancy Pelosi's support of the registry bill. We're going to gather at 9 a.m. at the State Building, 350 McAllister Street in San Francisco, and we're going to walk about 2 miles to the San Francisco Federal Building, which is at 97th Street, to hold a rally from about 9:30 or 10. We'll probably send a delegation up to Speaker Pelosi's office that morning after the rally. Should be very exciting. We're going to remind her, keep the promise that you made our community. You must push through the registry bill. You must offer a path to citizenship to the 10 to 12 million people who have suffered enough. Enough is enough. And let's do it now. Let's do it now before this Congress leaves and the new one comes in. There's no reason why Congress needs to wait.
Wow. Give the basic information again in terms of how people can participate and where they can get more information. Just the basics would be great.
The best way to find out more is through our Facebook page, which is Almas, A-L-M-A-S, Libres, L-I-B-R-E-S, Almas Libres, /Raices Collective. And you'll find all the information there. Dennis, one last note. You
sure.
know, people have been relying on Congress to focus in particular on more vulnerable groups like farm workers and the DACA youth, the Dreamers. And unfortunately, the court has come down in a negative way in the DACA decisions, which means that the Dreamer program will probably cease to exist. I hate to say it, but that's the truth within the next few months. And these other bills or proposals that offer legalization to essential workers or farm workers, they're not as expansive. They don't benefit as many people as this registry bill. So that's why we're focusing on this bill, and we thank everyone for the solidarity. So please join us on Friday. I hope to see you out there, Dennis.
I'm going to see if I can make it. But we're always happy to have you on. We wish the news was always a little bit better. But the work that you do, Renee Salcedo, is extraordinary. And we're always delighted to open up the microphone for you. So keep us posted on this. And I hope to see you on the ground sometime soon. We'll see what happens next. Thank you.
Thank you. Abrazo, compañero.
Gracias. And you are listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. We will continue our drumbeat coverage, by the way, of the election. I want to again remind you, Greg Palast broke a very important story, incredibly important story. It's up now on Truth Dig. We spent the last 25 minutes talking about it, so you can check that out at Truth Dig. And see how voter suppression looks when it's being portrayed by politicians as voting liberation. It's diabolical what's going on in Georgia, and we need to keep an eye on it. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is the Pacifica Radio Network. You're hearing Flashpoints on the People's Radio Network. We are happy to have this privilege to broadcast to you over these free speech, no holds barred, non-corporate, truth to power radio network, Pacifica, KPFA here in the Bay Area, KPFK in Los Angeles. We'll talk to you soon.
That wraps it up for another episode of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. For previous episodes, go to kpfa.org or flashpoints.net. For questions or comments, email dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you for listening.
Portland.
Check out Ear to the Streets of Portland with hosts Sequoina
and Kayla
every first and third Thursday of the month starting at 7 o'clock p.m.
Listen in as we interview community organizers, speak on issues focused on